Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched a central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began. Does anybody know what this is?
It's very simple. Just swap the gold for Bitcoin. If anybody actually swaps out their treasury bills for Bitcoin, then the U.S. is going to own it all. It's kind of like just getting Alaska or the Louisiana Purchase for free. They could pretty much have 20% of the network for free overnight just with a swap. They could even print the money. You know, yeah. I mean, they could buy it for next to nothing. The only alternative to the treasury bill for anybody is Bitcoin. And so just do that, and Bitcoin becomes the world reserve capital network, and the U.S. will own both sides of the equation. They'll own the currency and the capital.
You're listening to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Tuesday, February 25th. I'm Christy.
I'm Linda.
We're broadcasting from the KCNR studios in Redding, California, here on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, and streaming online at KCNR1460.com. You can follow us on X at Tokens Radio Show for updates and commentary, and I want to thank Ben for being here and producing the program.
Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
That was a smooth transition there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, as long as I know what I'm doing before we go into it, it'll work.
It's amazing what can happen when we know what we're doing.
Poor Ben, it's like, didn't you get that hand signal?
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Thank you again.
Yeah, it's been really good. Ben, you've been here, what, for 3 weeks with us now?
Yeah, since you guys took over the Tuesday night.
Yeah, this is awesome. So we're starting to get that simpatico thing going on.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, so
it's all good.
Much appreciation.
Yes, no problem.
Well, from a military strategic warning about Bitcoin's custody to Trump's surprise support for a national Bitcoin reserve, today's show connects explosive developments that could reshape the future of money and power. Senator Loomis drops a bombshell, but first, let's get a market update and a word from our sponsor.
All right. Well, currently, Bitcoin is at $88,422.99.
You're just in shock, aren't you?
I kind of am. It's like buy is going through my head right now, you know?
Yeah, you bet.
And, okay. So IBIT ETF is at $50.03. ETH is at $2,483.53. XRP is $229. And MicroStrategy is at $250.51.
Yeah, everything's down. Looking at CoinMarketCap before we came on the show, everything's in red.
It is.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what these markets do. I don't
care
whether you do gold, silver, whatever it is. The markets do that. They go up, they go down, they go up. They go down, but I know one thing most of the time, they never go back down to, like, I don't know, 13,000 for Bitcoin. I don't think it'll ever go back down like that.
Well, I think the world market is adjusting to the changes that are going on here in the United States, and the market's just, it's going to work itself out as it always does.
Yep.
So hang in there, folks. It's going to be just fine.
Like the scales, you know?
Yeah.
Boop, 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 boop. Yeah.
Sounds like a Libra.
Yeah, I'm just saying. All right. Our friends at the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators, sponsors today's show. Their carefully cultivated unique strands offer elevated experiences with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
So, do you think Trump just goes Bitcoin orange?
I think he's just orange.
Well,
orange man bad.
Orange man bad. But
orange man bad.
He is a badass, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I can say that on air, can't I? That's an okay word, isn't it? Yeah, I think we're getting the head nod, yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he's not just, you know, man red, but he's been orange man before.
Yeah, he has. When he gets too much color. Well, Senator Cynthia Lummis reveals a stunning shift in the former president's on our current president's stance on Bitcoin, including support for a national strategic reserve. And let's hear what the good senator had to say.
All right.
It was a big surprise to me. President Trump went on the stage before me at Bitcoin 2024. I did not know that he was going to announce his support for a Bitcoin strategic reserve in his remarks. Now, we had kicked around before his remarks that idea. He had a copy of my bill, but I didn't know if it resonated with him. I didn't know if he was thinking along the same lines. So I was so delighted. I can't even describe how pleased I was that he supported it. And he was much more supportive than I expected. He was also much more informed than I suspect. So he obviously has a background and is surrounding himself with people who have backgrounds in Bitcoin. So that was new to me, and I couldn't have been more delighted. He has continued consistently to support Bitcoin, the notion of a strategic reserve, and now even has added the notion of a sovereign wealth fund, which I'm extremely pleased about. So what we saw a taste of at Bitcoin 2024 is now turning into policy, which is every policymaker's dream. And
well, Trump's evolution from Bitcoin skeptic to strategic reserve supporter signals a major shift in Republican thinking. Why the change? Beyond appealing to younger voters, Lummis suggests it's about addressing the national debt.
Could be.
Yeah. Using Bitcoin's potential appreciation as a hedge, here's what's raising eyebrows. Some insiders speculate the Trump team might already be quietly building a Bitcoin position.
Oh, I have no doubt. Yeah. We've talked about it before. You know, his children and stuff are into the Bitcoin world quite a bit.
Yeah, Barron especially.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's the younger generation.
Young Barron. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. All right. So with Senator Lummis, she has a plan to get Bitcoin legislation through Congress, and it starts with the smallest steps, which is the way you got to do it usually. Here's her strategy for turning Bitcoin skeptics into supporters. So let's take a listen to this.
We're starting with a stablecoin bill because that was kicked around a lot during the last Congress. We're going to move quickly on that. It'll probably be a standalone bill. We'll try to get the 60 votes in the Senate that's necessary to bring a bill to a vote. That means it has to be bipartisan. We think we can do that. We couldn't have done that last year, but now we think we're there. So we're moving that first. We need to score a win to get some momentum in the digital asset space. That's how we see we can do it first. Then we're moving to market structure, which is determining statutorily what is a commodity and what is a security, and making sure that the regulatory framework is clear and well understood. Right now, as you know, for assets that are securities, the Securities Exchange Commission has slapped them with enforcement actions rather than clear guidance on how to comply with the law. It's cost them tens of millions of dollars in legal fees and gotten them nowhere. So we need to make it clear for everyone, whether it's Bitcoiners over on the Commodity Futures Trading Commission side or non-Bitcoiners whose asset falls into the securities space, to make it clear on how they can meet their requirements of their regulator. There's a great woman who is a commissioner at the SEC, Hester Peirce. Some of you probably know of Hester. She's knowledgeable and favorable towards digital assets, so she will be fair, whereas before we could not get fairness, not at the Fed, not at the FDIC, not at the White House, not at the Office of Comptroller of the Currency. It didn't matter where we turned. They were all pushing against all digital assets. and they've lumped them all in the same space. That's always been another problem. You know, there's Bitcoin and there's everything else, and they were all getting painted with the same brush. So it was very hard to get any recognition of not only the differences between commodities and securities, but the importance of this asset class being embedded in the United States. In the meantime, then, the European Union, who has a more embedded regulatory structure, has been courting digital asset businesses to come and home base in the European Union. So it was really helpful, turning again back to Bitcoin 2024, when President Trump said, I want this industry in the United States. I want Bitcoin mined in the United States. I want the U.S. to be what he called the crypto capital of the world. So we have sort of a mission that the president has laid out for all of us. And now we have to figure out how best to accomplish that mission.
I just love how she says there's Bitcoin and everything else. And it was true that the Biden administration wasn't able to differentiate between that. They had no interest in it because we know what it represents. It represents freedom, and that's not what their bag was all about.
Game.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, how this transition, the maturity of Bitcoin, the whole marketplace, cryptocurrencies, has matured. We've talked about this many times, and just how our show started. We were talking about Bitcoin and cryptos, and a lot more cryptos than Bitcoin
in the beginning,
over three years ago. Yep. And now it's Bitcoin, and then there's crypto.
Yeah, I also like what you said. Now we have fairness on our side, which is true. Therefore, for the last 3-5 years, there has been no fairness on the side of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, period, really. It's always been one-sided. Like I say, that wasn't their game plan with other administrations to have any fairness or anything, or allow us to have the freedom that comes with it.
Yeah,
that wasn't their agenda at all, and they were doing anything in their power to squash it, which we're finding out more and more now.
Oh, we're finding out an awful lot, you know, which is really interesting, which is a really good lead into this is, you know, former hedge fund manager James Lavish. He was also one of those folks.
Yes, he was.
No, didn't believe in the Bitcoin. You know, he was he has a bold Bitcoin price target for 2024. But before what his number is going to be, his journey was from skeptic to Bitcoin to believer, and tells us why this prediction will matter to us. Before we play James Lavish's Bitcoin prediction, here's what you need to know about this former Wall Street skeptic. When markets went haywire in 2020, Lavish did something rare in finance. He admitted he might be wrong about Bitcoin. I think
He's not the only one. Yeah, exactly.
And after diving deep into research, this hedge fund veteran didn't just change his mind. He went all in, launching his Bitcoin fund. And what turned him? Lavish sees our economy split in two. Asset owners riding the inflation wave up, while wage earners watch their paychecks buy less each month.
Right.
He points to the money printing of 2020 through 2022 as the match that lit the fire. And while official inflation numbers tell one story, Lavish argues the real impact on everyday Americans is far worse.
I think he's correct.
I do, too.
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. He's watching smart money flee the dollar, pouring into hard assets like Bitcoin. But why? You know, because they see what's coming, a potential crisis in the government bond market. And that can send shockwaves through the entire financial system. And so, do you want to hear his price prediction?
Yeah, just one second.
Yeah.
While we're on assets, I had a client in my office today, and we were talking about Bitcoin. And you know, all fairness to them, they know nothing about Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking back and forth about, you know, 21 million and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, all this around the world, and can you carry it, and how do you store it, and everything. And the one guy turns to me and he goes, what it sounds like is, we need an asset. I said, exactly. That's exactly what it is. You got it. Ding, 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 ding. He goes, oh, yeah, I kind of understand now.
Good.
I guess, so that was interesting. So
yeah, it just takes a little while. You know? And what I one thing that we didn't put in the notes here is when you listen to the entire interview, he said, he had a little arrogance, and he was talking to his wife, and the wife had heard about Bitcoin on Tim Ferriss podcast.
Yeah.
And then she's a writer, and he's the financial guru, right?
Oh, yeah,
so,
that's right.
Remember
huh?
I was telling you about that? And
yeah.
She had says, well, honey, what about Bitcoin? And he goes, well, you are the writer, I'm the financial person, and so he ate some major humble pie coming around 2020, and here he is. So why don't we hear his price prediction, hey?
Yeah.
All right, here
Let's
we go.
Go.
It's about a minute and 20 seconds.
If you just strip out all the noise of the economy and you just focus on Bitcoin, I think that Bitcoin is going to have a very big year. I think that, it could easily double from here this year with all the tailwinds that I've been talking about. It's been consolidating for a while in this $90,000 to $100,000 level, and that's important. It's healthy. It's good. That means that you get all those sellers that were kind of waiting for that $100,000 level, get them out of the way, and then you're going to have a pocket there where it jumps to the next level mentally. $100,000 is a huge mental level, and it's tried to break through it a number of times now. But once it breaks through and stays through, breaks that 120 level, and then it comes back to 105, and that seems like a deal again, then that's where you really see it take off. Believe that, I've been saying $180,000 in the fall of 2025 for a while now, and I think that that's still very much in play. And Bitcoin is explosive. The one thing that you have to understand is if you're trading around this, please have your core position. Don't play with the core position, because you could easily miss out. This could easily just, just outrun everything very quickly. And if you look back over the years, I think it's like 10 days out of every year that Bitcoin makes its gains. And so you just can't, you have to be allocated to, you can't miss those 10 days. That's how volatile this thing is and how explosive it is to the upside.
When you recorded this, Bitcoin was, around $91,000. So we're at $88,000. He's predicting 180 gosh, we were just saying a few weeks ago, if it got down at this level, this is a resistance point. So we'll see what happens. And he's on the low side. Yeah, he is
prediction
on the low.
Really.
Yeah.
When you look at all the other ones.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he's wrong, but they're predicting it to be a lot higher in a longer period of time.
Yeah.
Grant you.
And even the most conservative financial managers out there who do not study Bitcoin have had higher price expectations than what James Lavish is saying
right now.
This is ultra conservative.
It is.
Yeah.
All right. Next, Bitcoin is undergoing a massive shift as institutions increase their exposure and nation states enter the game. The traditional 4-year Bitcoin cycle may be ending, potentially leading to a slow and steady repricing of Bitcoin. Over 1,500 institutions have disclosed long exposure to Bitcoin, including sovereign wealth funds. A small allocation to Bitcoin in investment portfolios may increase significantly soon as Bitcoin continues to outperform their other assets. Hurley explains this in our next clip. Bitcoin will never be the same again. Are you ready? So here we go.
All right.
The Q4 2024 institutional 13F filings have been made public, and over 1,500 institutions have been revealed to have long exposure to Bitcoin. Every quarter, large investment firms with over $100 million in assets under management must submit this 13F form to the SEC, disclosing their holdings of U.S. stocks and equity-related assets such as ETFs, REITs, options, and convertible bonds. These institutions include banks, hedge funds, RIAs, family offices, endowments, pensions, sovereign wealth funds, and other asset managers. One of the biggest and most exciting disclosures was that Abu Dhabi Sovereign Wealth Fund holds significant Bitcoin exposure in the form of BlackRock's IBIT ETF, which led many to believe that this increases the chances that the newly announced U.S. Sovereign Wealth Fund will also include Bitcoin exposure. A list of the 25 largest institutional Bitcoin ETF holders include Goldman Sachs, Paul Tudor Jones Investment Firm, the State of Wisconsin Investment Firm, and Morgan Stanley, to name a few. So if there's anything that can be said to be certain about this Bitcoin cycle, it's that institutions are most definitely here. And they're just getting started. In fact, we are now just entering an era where large corporations and investment firms will be unable to ignore adding Bitcoin exposure much longer. Eric Yakes, author of The Seventh Property and co-founder of Epoch Investment Firm, and he talks about this shift that is well underway.
Bitcoin is one of the best performing assets in measurable history. And out of publicly available data, and we look at recent asset prices, there is no company that has reached a $2 trillion market cap in 15 years. That's how rapid. A lot of the companies that are more valuable from an equity standpoint than Bitcoin, it took them 30, 40 years to get to this point. So that's what's really interesting is like we have one of the best performing assets. It's risk-adjusted returns. And this is the biggest thing, I think, to like financial allocators this cycle. Risk-adjusted returns are outperforming all other asset classes. It's the best performing ETF in history. Its AUM is larger than the gold ETFs. It had performance in 2 months what it took the gold ETFs 2 years to do. It's more scarce. It's the only asset in the world with supply that doesn't respond to demand. Largest computer network in the world. We can go on all day. There's just like a million things that you can go into now. And all the data supports its price performance and Sharpe ratios. The burden of proof is on them now as to why they do not have this incorporated in their clients' portfolio. And I view that like over the next few years, this is like, all these 60-40 portfolio guys are going to be thinking, okay, you at least need a 1% to 5% allocation. Like that's one of the big shifts that's happening right now is, okay, we need a little bit of an allocation. And I think that there's a few metrics of what we're watching that will change that 1% to 5% to turning into 30% in the not too distant future.
Yakes and Epoch put out a comprehensive report on the state of the Bitcoin ecosystem that is free to download and share. What he's getting at in that clip is that Bitcoin has entered a new era, and nothing will be the same as it was before. Right now, institutions are just starting to add a 1% to 5% allocation to Bitcoin. BlackRock has already recommended a 1% to 2% Bitcoin allocation to their clients, in which they hold over $10 trillion in AUM. And as Bitcoin continues to outperform nearly every other asset on the planet, that allocation will only increase from here. Great example, Cantor Fitzgerald recently went all in on Bitcoin exposure, increasing their MicroStrategy exposure by over $1 billion in Q4 2024. The CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald is Howard Lutnick, who is now overseeing Trump's new U.S. sovereign wealth fund. Another great example is the State of Wisconsin Investment Board, which tripled their Bitcoin exposure from last quarter. These firms tend to do the obvious. They add to their winners. So you can really start to see the trend here, and you realize that the game has changed. There is a massive cultural shift happening in the investment world, and Bitcoin is at the forefront.
You can't say Bitcoin's going to zero anymore. I think it's incredibly hard to say Bitcoin isn't going to consume the market of gold. Like that, I view it like basically a near certainty at this point. Anything beyond that is where we have to make arguments, and like that's kind of the world of more technical debate, etc. And I feel like that's the big catalyst that we're running into this cycle, is there's this huge cultural shift. What I expect is that in like 3 to 5 years from now, I think people are going to be considering stocks, bonds, and Bitcoin in their portfolios. I think it's going to become a cultural normality, particularly with younger generations, of just saving in it. I think that shift's happening right now.
I find this post summarizes the year ahead for Bitcoin very well. This year, you're going to see more inflows into ETFs, more corporates buying more Bitcoin, more nation states buying more Bitcoin, U.S. wealth management buying for clients, banks launching services to help clients access Bitcoin, regulators creating productive clarity, the world, geopolitics, monetary policy, increasing in circumstances that drive the need for Bitcoin, and you're going to see more reputable people revealing their conviction in Bitcoin. It's going to be a watershed year. So what does this cultural shift mean for the price of Bitcoin in the current cycle we're in? Now, I made an argument last week that this could very well mean the end of the 4-year Bitcoin cycle as we know it. This could mean no blow-off top, no alt season, no massive 80% correction, just year after year of 40 to 50% price increases, followed by 6 to 8 months of long-term holders unloading bags straight into the hands of institutions, corporations, and sovereign wealth funds. So what exactly could this look like in chart form? Well, it might look something like Amazon from 2002 to today. If the 4-year cycles are really over, don't be surprised if the next 20 years of Bitcoin, even if you still think we have a blow off top this cycle, you have to at least notice the significant changes we've seen in the market and be ready for the possibility that we're in entirely new territory for Bitcoin. One final take, and this one from Harry Sudok of CleanSpark. He says, "We are currently living through Schrodinger's coin at the moment. It is simultaneously already a critical global reserve asset, making its way into the hold forever category on balance sheets everywhere, while also serving as the volatility tool best leveraged during our compressed information hypercycle. Both these use cases have tremendous utility and can be positive for both price and adoption, but they're happening in parallel and make clear views on each difficult. Ultimately, Bitcoin and Bitcoin markets are the vanguard of what is coming, and they're only just beginning to assert themselves on the global economy. Only advance. What Harry is pointing out here is that Bitcoin is in a completely unique and somewhat paradoxical position. It's simultaneously becoming a major global financial asset with gold-like attributes, while also continuing to exist as a trading vehicle for speculators, hence the short-term volatility. These two competing realities won't last forever. One will win out in the end, and the fact that Bitcoin's volatility is decreasing as it matures, and it's becoming more and more recognized as a global store of value, it's clear to me which one will win out in the end. So you don't want to be caught in trading mode when Bitcoin's full potential is finally realized. So the best strategy in this situation is to log off, stack a little every day or every week, and ignore the price and the charts for the next few years.
I think well said.
Yeah, I don't think now we can add to that one.
Right, absolutely.
And so that's a good time that we're going to go ahead and take a break. You are listening to Tokens Radio Show on 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we will see you in a few minutes.
There's a man in a church who I really hope told me the truth. Said there's a man in the sky watching over me. It don't help if you can fly, it's way past the moon. And there's men here on the ground that just want to burn it down. They want money, they want power, don't want no one else allowed. We'll be fine, babe.
Looking for the freshest top shelf flower? Look no further than the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake, where they work directly with small local farmers to bring you the finest flower that fits your price. The Queen of Dragons has the best prices on carts, edibles, concentrates, and pre-rolls. Plus, don't miss happy hour every day from 6 p.m. until close and all day Sundays. Don't just stock up on toilet paper. The Queen of Dragons has great deals, so you can stock up on the best flower for the best prices. So what are you waiting for? Stop by Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-238-5638 for details or delivery. That's 530-238-5638. And don't forget to follow Queen of Dragons on Facebook and X at the Queen Dragons for all the latest deals and updates. Support Queen of Dragons, a local business in the city of Shasta Lake, where you will find the most friendly and knowledgeable staff. Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragons.
Get ready to explore the expansive universe of aviation and cutting-edge space technology in Turtle Bay's newest exhibition, Mission Aerospace, presented by Dr. Eric and Tiffany Blassingame and produced by Minotaur Mazes, on display at Turtle Bay Museum January 18th through April 20th. This highly interactive maze puzzle is sure to inspire all generations. Mission Aerospace at Turtle Bay Museum is free for members and included with paid admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, and I'm here with the latest local updates. Following severe storms in February, Shasta County is documenting flood damage to potentially provide reimbursement to affected residents and businesses. Sheriff Michael Johnson declared a local emergency on February 5th, which was ratified by the County Board of Supervisors. This activated assistance from the California State Office of Emergency Services for road maintenance, rescue operations, and hazard mitigation. Residents experiencing significant storm damage must submit documentation to the Shasta County Office of Emergency Services by February 28, 2025, though reimbursement isn't guaranteed. Required information include name, property type, address, contact details, damage description, and photos submitted via phone at 530-245-6095 or email dwarren@shastacounty.gov. The Sacramento River's recreational boating restriction implemented on February 7th was lifted on February 17th. While the county addresses immediate storm recovery needs, a major healthcare development is taking shape in the region. The Redding Rancheria is launching the construction of a $230 million
$1 million Health Village, a project conceived in 2019. The 190,000 square foot facility to be built across from the Wind River Resort and Casino will be the largest tribal health facility west of the Mississippi. Construction begins March 17th with an expected 22-month timeline. The facility will integrate multiple medical approaches, including Western, Eastern, and Chinese medicine. Features include indoor and outdoor pools, workout facilities, yoga rooms, and a spa. The project aims to address disparities affecting Native American communities where tribal members' average lifespan was reported at 52 years. The Health Village's design incorporates natural elements and traditional aspects while providing modern medical technology. The focus is on preventative rather than reactive health care. As these infrastructure developments progress, political activism has also made its mark on the community. On President's Day, approximately 400 people gathered outside Redding City Hall in California, joining nationwide protests regarding President Trump's administration. The crowd grew from 20 people at 11:30 a.m. to 400 by 12:30 p.m., according to event organizers. Both Trump supporters and opponents were present, carrying American flags and various signs expressing their views. While discussions between the groups became animated at times, the event remained peaceful. Protesters carried signs addressing various issues, including civil rights, healthcare access, and government policies. The demonstration included chants and speeches from both sides. Residents cited various reasons for attending, from supporting the administration to advocating for community unity. Organizers indicated that future events are planned. Beyond local developments, state-level policy changes could impact many California residents, particularly regarding insurance coverage. The California Department of Insurance has proposed 10 bills to address rising insurance costs and wildfire impacts. Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara announced a package which includes the California Safe Homes Act and Community Fire Hardening Commission Act to establish new oversight bodies. The Eliminate the List Act would require insurers to pay claims without detailed inventories, while the Insurance Payment Protection Act would cap adjuster fees at 15% of payouts. The deceptive
Just play our music and we'll come
yeah,
on
we'll
back.
Yeah, we'll just come yeah. on back. Sorry
Welcome
about that.
Welcome to live radio.
Yeah.
And we're back.
No, we're not. Oh, are
oh,
we?
We are.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, you have no...
My cans are not
your
working.
Your cans are dead. I'm not sure.
Well, go ahead. Yeah.
Just work with it. We're trying here, guys. All right. This segment is sponsored by the Anderson VFW Post. Since 1899, the veterans of foreign wars have been fighting for veterans' rights, from creating the VA to securing benefits for today's service members. If you're planning an event, give the Anderson VFW Post a call. They would love to host it for you at 530-365-9650. They are great people down there, and they will take good care of you.
How do you know, or how do you take a nation drowning in debt to zero income tax?
That is a good question. That's in the forefront quite a bit right now.
Well, and Governor DeSantis is floating the notion of No property taxes.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's huge. It's one of the most, one of the biggest cons, I think, for stealing property. Because over time, especially elderly people, they have to leave their property because they can't afford the property taxes.
Right. And I think we've mentioned it on the show before. It's your property.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I kind of went down a rabbit hole there. But how do you take a nation drowning in debt to zero income tax? Well, Trump's new Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, just laid out a stunning roadmap that could revolutionize the American economy. From tariffs to trillion-dollar balance sheets, this isn't your typical D.C. talk. It's a moonshot that's getting Wall Street's attention. And Anthony Pompliano explains. Good old Pomp. Here we go.
Good old Pomp.
Howard Lutnick, the new Secretary of Commerce, was on television discussing the administration's goal of eliminating federal income tax. This is the type of big, bold thinking that can change the direction of a country. Now, it's important to understand what appears to be the playbook. DOGE is focused on cutting $2 trillion from the government budget. That would eliminate the current annual deficit and bring us very close to a balanced budget. The tariffs being levied would increase the government's revenue, combined with Lutnick's plan to create an additional $1 trillion of revenue from the government's balance sheet, and that would lead to an annual surplus. As soon as you get to a surplus, you can start to lower the tax rate of American citizens. I don't see a world where the tax rate goes to 0% overnight, but we could see a slow, steady reduction over the next 4 years. We saw a reduction from 39.6% to 37% in 2018, which was obviously well received by Americans. The most interesting part of this entire situation is that I don't remember Trump or his team promising a balanced budget on the campaign trail. I don't think they ever mentioned abolishing the federal income tax either. In fact, I spoke on numerous podcasts about my disappointment that neither major party candidate was even pretending they wanted to balance the budget. But here we are. The ramifications of this achievement would be profound. The simple increase in money available to hardworking families would be obvious. But you could see second-order effects of stock prices, higher, Bitcoin, higher, real estate, higher, money market funds, higher, etc. According to prediction market Cauchy, the market is putting a 54% chance on Trump being able to reduce the national debt. On one hand, that is a much higher number than you would expect, but it is still far away from a near certainty. Just as I continue to say that the single most important thing in Bitcoin is whether the United States create a Bitcoin strategic reserve, I believe the most important thing for the long-run status of the U.S. economy is whether the federal income tax is significantly reduced or not. This single number represents the success or failure of so many other things, the tariff program, the external revenue service, national debt, interest rates, and else. If I had to guess right now, we will not see federal income tax reduced to 0%. Instead, I could see a world where we get the rate reduced under 30% and long-term capital gains taxes dropped to 15%. These two reductions would increase investments in America and serve as a boom to the U.S. economy. It is a big, bold idea, but we need these types of ideas to get back on track. I don't care who is in the White House. I want to see Americans with more money in their pocket and a country that is accelerating towards a bright future. Hopefully, that is what we are going to get.
Well, do you think he's going to be able to reduce the national debt?
Oh, I think so.
I do, too.
I don't see how you can't when you start finding all the money and all the different moving parts we got going now.
Yeah.
I mean, really?
So this recording was done a few days ago, and what just happened today prior to coming on the air is that the House passed the resolution bill making Trump's 2017 income tax cuts permanent.
Right. It extended them.
Yeah. So they were extended, but now they're going to make them permanent. And then also they were going to do a $5 trillion bill, which is going to give Trump the money he needs for national security, the border, and all of that, and to also be able to put these other programs into place that will help inflation and all of that. And he's pushing for Keystone again. It's like, let's get that baby going. And if you can't do this, you know, contractor, we have somebody else who can.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, we wouldn't be able to operate without the income tax. Yeah, we would.
Oh, yeah, for
it
sure.
It would work just fine. And even if he doesn't get it to zero right away. I mean, he said, like, down to 15% for capital gains. That's huge.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Sure.
Instead of, like, at 37%.
Yeah.
Do you realize the difference that can make on somebody's
huge.
Tax return?
I don't even know why we have them in the first place.
Yeah, because you're actually, it's kind of like the property tax thing.
Yeah, it really is. It's all got to be first.
Yeah, you pay tax on something because you were smart or whatever, you invested your money, and now you're having to pay tax because you did that. Bad you.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well, look how long it took them to make a Roth IRA.
Well, that's true.
Right, so. Anyway.
All right. The Federal Reserve faces unprecedented scrutiny as Doge targets what some call the mother of slush funds, with Ron Paul leading the investigation. We'll explore the mystery of the Fed's $7 trillion and who might have received it. Here's what Dr. St. Ange, to explain this, how he aims at the mother slush funds.
Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. The Federal
Last Reserve. Week, Elon Musk suggested the Department of Government Efficiency could audit the mother of slush funds, the Federal Reserve. Even suggested Ron Paul could lead the team. Now, Doge has already found at least $70 billion in waste and fraud in the federal government. The Fed could ramp that up tenfold. And the Fed could use some sunlight. Economist Murray Rothbard, in his book The Case Against the Fed, famously noted the Federal Reserve has less oversight than the CIA. In fact, you can find videos across the internet of Ron Paul, who was then chair of the House Subcommittee on Monetary Policy, pressing Fed chairs for information only to get smirks from Ben Bernanke or Alan Greenspan, who didn't believe they owed Congress nothing, raising the question of who exactly runs the Fed They say it's not the president. Apparently it's not Congress. To which the answer is it runs itself on behalf of the banks who literally own it. So what would an audit of the Fed uncover? There's two big areas. First, how the Fed conducts monetary policy, meaning how much money to print, where to put interest rates, which can spin money for Wall Street either directions. Now, today these decisions are secret. We can only guess how much is negotiated over late-night dinners that touch on future employment prospects. Given Wall Street bankers habitually pay former Fed chairs hundreds of thousands of dollars for speeches, Janet Yellen got over $7 million, we can guess these are fruitful discussions. The second big area is the Fed as slush fund. The Fed currently reports $7 trillion in assets. These were overwhelmingly bought directly from Wall Street or hedge funds, including billions of dollars in overseas so-called swaps, where the Fed just hands dollars to foreign central banks. We have no idea what backroom deals went on to use your dollars to bail out one bank or one hedge fund, but not another, or to bail out one country, remember the tequila crisis, but not another. And in short, they literally printed up $7 trillion, and we have no idea where the dollars went. In fact, without an audit, we have no idea if $7 trillion is the actual number. Maybe it's $9 trillion, maybe it's $12. Who knows how much was printed? Who knows how many counterfeit dollars they dumped into special interests to dilute the dollar's buying power and siphon away America's life savings? Now, a main reason the Fed has never been audited is because it is self-funding. It prints its own budget, the same way a basement counterfeiter prints their own budget. This means the Fed does not go to Congress for a budget. In fact, it traditionally hands money to Congress, called remittances, essentially some of the proceeds of its counterfeiting. Now, these were substantial, around $70 billion a year, until Jerome Powell managed to put the Fed a quarter trillion in the hole. But even in the good old days, they represented just 10% of what the Fed printed every year. The rest, we have no idea where it went. The swamp will fight a Fed audit for the same reason they're fighting all the audits. They own the grift. The trick will be communicating to voters just how corrupt Wall Street and the Fed are. A 2022 poll by Ipsos found 93% of Americans say they know little to nothing about the Fed, which the Fed likes just fine. Fortunately, the corruption DOGE is currently uncovering across the federal government can make it crystal clear to this 93% why the mother of slush funds needs the mother of audits.
That's well put.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Ron Paul was interviewed by Natalie Brunell, and he had mentioned, he goes, there's no way that he'll be selected to audit the Fed. And he's just not interested in having to conform to a bunch of protocols to be able to do that. But we'll see. He would love to be an advisor.
Oh,
and
sure,
participate in it, but actually lead the charge is something that he kind of poo-pooed. But you never know. You never know what conversations are going on, right?
No, because we have seen it like with other people that they didn't think they were ever going to get called upon. And guess what? They did.
Yes.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Like our new assistant FBI director.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. So.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I texted Linda the other night, and we had noticed that Major Jason Lowry surfaced.
Yeah.
And, you know, he breaks the silence, and it seems as though lately when he speaks, the Bitcoin community has always listened to him.
Very
smart man.
But
he's been off the radar for some time. Oh. And when he does pop up every now and then, it seems as though he's trying to tell us something. And so he's back with some heavy insights, and we're going to try to decode what this military strategist is trying to tell us. First, he started up. Well, I got to tell you, let me just set this up. This is hours and hours of text threads within X.
Right.
Okay, so we did our best to break this down and try to decode it. So first, he paints a stark warning picture with the biggest threat to Bitcoin. It isn't the technology, it's human nature and government power. He's essentially saying, don't take the bait. Are those juicy yields being offered for your Bitcoin? Think about J.P. Morgan,
mm-hmm.
BlackRock. That's the modern equivalent of the golden handcuffs from 1933 when the government forced citizens to hand over their gold. Okay?
But
guess where he's going on that.
Right. But here is where it gets very fascinating. Lowry is shifting the conversation from digital gold to what he calls digital power.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying we're all thinking too small. While everyone's debating Bitcoin as money, he is seeing it as something far more profound, a new form of power projection in the digital age. Here's the real kicker. He's introducing this concept of mutually assured preservation.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how nuclear weapons created a standoff that prevented World War III. Lowry suggests Bitcoin could create a similar effect, but instead of through destruction, through preservation. The more major powers that adopt Bitcoin, the more they all invested in protecting it. It's like a digital peace treaty written in code. What a different way to think about this.
Well, he mentioned this in his thesis, Software.
He did.
And as he was developing the concept and perfecting his way of communicating it, so it made sense. And so it's not the first time that we've heard about power projection and mutually assured preservation. This is really cool, and I just think it's interesting at the time, now that he's coming out. I mean, he's active duty. I mean, he was off the radar because he's not allowed to talk about this stuff.
Right.
So he must have permission to be able to go talk about this. And I have to think about what Trump is saying about how he just said today how instrumental Space Force is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had, like you say, he had to be quiet there for a long time because we don't know what he was involved with.
Right.
How deep he was or what was going on.
And to our audience who's going, well, okay, he's in the military. Major Lowry, we should tell you, was one of the first Air Force active duty. He's a major. Who was selected for the Space Force during the Trump administration.
Yeah, which
he was sent to MIT to go do a deep dive on Bitcoin research. And when he left MIT after another master's degree, he goes back to the military, he wasn't able to talk. One of his last messages was him going off to the Pentagon to go talk to his bosses. Remember that?
Right. Yeah. And remember, he got selected and he just kind of went poof.
Yeah.
You know, and there was very few people that actually knew that where he went and what he, any idea what he might be working on, you know what I mean?
Well, we got an idea, and then his thesis came off the market.
Right.
So the major's message is clear. Keep your Bitcoin in self-custody. This is really what he's trying to tell you, and this is what he's been saying all along. Mm-hmm. Think beyond just its monetary value and understand that what we're witnessing is the emergence of a new form of global power dynamics. I think we've seen some of that also with a big exchange, Bitbyte, and yeah, it's just where the Ethereum was hacked. So he's essentially telling us, while everyone else is playing checkers, think about yields and price reduction predictions. The real game is chess, and it's about who controls and protects this new form of digital power. This is what he said in the past about this is a military thing.
Yes.
Remember, folks, when a military strategist breaks the silence to share these insights, it's probably worth paying attention to what he sees coming. And let's dig deeper into why Major Lowry's warning about Bitcoin custody hits differently when you understand his background. As a military strategist focused on digital warfare and power projection, he's not just looking at this through the lens of an investor, a crypto enthusiast. He's viewing it through the eyes of someone who understands how nation states think about power and control.
So when he mentions companies renting Bitcoin, which is interesting thought, because you're just now starting to hear that by offering yield, he is highlighting a fascinating parallel to history. Just like banks in the early 1900s convinced people to deposit their gold for a modest return, today's crypto platforms are doing the same with Bitcoin. But here's the strategic insight. Once assets are concentrated in those honeypots, like exchanges and custody providers, they become perfect targets for government action. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Think about companies like
Strategy,
and NYDIG that hold massive Bitcoin reserve. Lowry suggests these could become the prime targets in a modern version of Executive Order 6102. But here's the twist. Instead of offering dollars at a fixed price, as they did with gold in 1933, he believes governments might offer double the market value. And why, you ask? Because it makes the confiscation politically palatable. Imagine the headlines. Government offers Bitcoin holders 200% premium in the national interest. But the most intriguing part of Lowry's recent message is how he's evolving the narrative from Bitcoin is digital gold to Bitcoin digital power. He's suggesting that we currently call mining is a form of power projection in the digital space. When he says digital power, it's more interesting than internet money. He's hinting at Bitcoin's role in future national security frameworks.
Mm. So his concept of mutually assured preservation is particularly fascinating because it flips the Cold War doctrine on its head. And instead of nations pointing nuclear weapons at each other, they'd be pointing mining rigs at the Bitcoin network, creating a situation where attacking the system becomes an act of self-harm. Brilliant. Remember when someone with Lowry's military background and strategic insight breaks silence to share these thoughts, it's often a signal that bigger moves are being contemplating at the nation state level. We hear rumblings of that all the time.
We do.
He's essentially telling us that while most people are focused on Bitcoin's price and yield, the real game being played is about global power dynamics and digital sovereignty. And the takeaway? The battle for Bitcoin may not play out in markets or code, but in the halls of power where decisions about national security and strategic assets are made. And Lowry's warning is clear. Keeping your Bitcoin in self-custody isn't just about financial sovereignty anymore. It's about preserving your position in what could become the next power shift in human history.
When a military strategist like Major Lowry emerges from silence to warn about Bitcoin honeypots and digital power projection, it's worth remembering. History doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. And right now, it's rhyming to the tune last heard in 1933. But this time, the power to rewrite the ending lies in your own hands, or more specifically, in your own keys. This is the moment to decide which side of the history you want to be on. And we have a clip from Ron Paul about this.
Yeah, we're going to, well, not about this. Let's hold off on that for just a second. But, you know, it's, wow. I mean, I think the takeaway on this is you've got to do not buy into leveraging your Bitcoin in any way. Hold on to it. Custody it yourself.
Yeah. So. And like Michael Saylor said, at least 4 years.
Oh, at
not
least.
Not less than four.
Yes.
And if not 10.
So let's play this list clip real quick.
Okay.
That's preservation of value, and that's what the market has always said should be money. Money comes into effect in a natural way, not in an edict, not by fiat, by governments declaring it is money. You know, as much as I would like to do something with the Fed, I say the Fed's going to self-destruct eventually anyway when the money's gone. But why wouldn't we legalize competing currencies? Why couldn't people save, put this in a mattress and get four or five times much of the value in a few years? So the record of what you've done in the last 6 years is destroy the value of real money. The Federal Reserve is given a responsibility to protect the value of the dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah. He makes some really good points in
there.
He
sure does.
In a very short period of time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean,
I like that. Why shouldn't you have competing currencies?
Sure. Oh, gosh, listening to that whole interview of his, he was talking about, hey, If people want bananas to compete against bananas, why not? If that's what the people want, it should let it happen.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. You don't need the central authority to control all of that. The markets can do just fine.
And yeah, the Federal Reserve would collapse and go away. Wow, that would be terrible now, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Once again, went by really quick.
Yeah.
Hope you guys all enjoyed some of the information that we provided tonight.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Take care.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.